Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people. And their essential love of justice.
Hi, welcome to Kudzu Vine for April 24th, 2016. I'm your host, David McLaughlin. Joining me as always, welcome Catherine Smith.
Greetings from Atlanta.
And welcome Tim Shiflett.
Good evening, sir.
Yes, tonight's one of those nights where we, every once in a while we do this, where we don't even plan to have a guest. And tonight's one of those. And what we're doing instead of worrying about a guest is Tim, Catherine, and I went through all of the Senate races, looked at them, and picked out about our best, our top five races that we think are going to be the most interesting, not necessarily the most hotly contested, although a race that is hotly contested is interesting. But there's probably more than five of those this year, so I don't think, Catherine, Tim and I will have the same exact list either. So kind of how I want to structure this so we can kind of go through every race and it's not just now they're just talking about numbers and rankings. We're going to go through every state that has a Senate race and those that we kind of one of us picked we may talk a little bit more about. If it's not real hotly contested, we may go through it a little quicker and we'll go alphabetically. So the first one that comes up is Alaska. Did either of you have Alaska on your top five rankings?
No.
Nope.
Nope. I'll say a little note on this. Lisa Murkowski is the candidate. Now, she did get defeated at the primary, which kind of makes it where maybe something could happen here. But it appears that the Democrats don't even have a candidate that the DSCC even put on their website. So that seems like a first step into making that a little more interesting is you got to have a stronger candidate they're willing to mention. Next one is Arizona, and I'll go ahead and tell y'all, I had Arizona ranked first, and while I don't necessarily think it may be the closest race, although it could be if presidential race gets close in Arizona, it is so interesting because it features John McCain, and if you put a list up of the most important or interesting politicians, John McCain's going to be up there, and the fact that he's facing a tough primary and a tough general in an increasingly purple state, I had Arizona at one. Did either one of y'all even rank it, or where did you rank it? Catherine?
Well, I think it's – I consider it one to watch because of, you know, John McCain and you know, some of the problems that he's been having just because he's sometimes too outspoken. So I think it'll be interesting. It'll certainly be one we'll be watching on election night, I'm sure.
Yeah, Tim, your thoughts on Arizona?
Yeah, I had it fourth out of my five, mainly because, like y'all have already said, I'm curious to see if John McCain survives. He does have two problems, unlike a lot of other senators. Not only would he face a formidable opponent in Representative Ann Kirkpatrick, who right now, as I'm looking, he's running about a half a point ahead of her in a compilation of polls. But he's also got to worry about the primary challenge of, you know, Kelly Ward, the Tea Partier who's running to the right of him. Her only problem, she don't have any money. Then you got to throw the presidential race into the mix. And I'm just not sure what, say, having Donald Trump at the top of the ticket in such a contentious down-ballot race would do. I think a lot of people are wondering about that in a lot of states, don't y'all?
Yeah.
Yes, and Arizona could be a big one, given that the Latino vote could be energized and vote in the biggest numbers ever for the Democratic Party.
Mm-hmm.
And John McCain's a guy that could try to distance himself from Donald Trump more so than other candidates. And if he does that, how does that impact things? So in that primary, I mean, it's not a foregone conclusion. He, you know, wins that thing, although he'd have to be the favorite. Moving through
David,
Arkansas.
I just want to, David, I want to interrupt you. You skipped Alabama.
Well, you know what? The DSCC skips Alabama, so let me go back and thank you for correcting both of us. Alabama, I didn't have it on my top five.
I didn't either, but I just wanted to, know.
Yeah, you're
there
right.
There is a race
we
there.
Should have mentioned. What is going on the DSCC side? They didn't think about Alabama. Tim, what do you think on Alabama?
I think it's probably one of the safest Republican holds in the country. So I guess they just didn't bother with it. It looks like they would at least listen.
Yeah, you'd think.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm sorry I interrupted the flow.
No, that was a good interruption, Catherine. And now one thing I will say is before we had Martin Weinberg on a few weeks ago, I thought if we had time to talk about the Senate race, we would. Longtime Senator Richard Shelby is running for re-election, so it's not likely he'd, face a lot of trouble anyway. But the candidate, the only candidate that files a Democrat is a single-issue candidate, and that single-issue, it said, was marijuana legislation, which typically those candidates are Johnny One Notes that are, so focused on that. They don't have a broad array of issues, and they usually don't do well at the ballot box. But I did look at the guy's website, and it looked, confident, so it was kind of a contrast in terms for those kind of fellas. Sometimes there are ladies, I guess. Usually it's, spinning pot leaves, and it's poorly put together and everything else. Arkansas. Tim, you got Arkansas listed?
Nope.
Me either.
Catherine, Arkansas?
Nope.
No, I don't either, but I will say this is better than Alabama. John Bozeman, I don't think he's incredibly popular, but he's unknown. And he's facing Connor Eldridge, a former U.S. attorney who has prosecuted a lot of drug trafficking through the state. It sounds like that he'll be a better tier challenger than some of these other tough states will be, but he's not ready to break in top five with that. Next state will be California. Barbara Boxer is retiring. California is a very, very Democratic state, but the primary's a little bit interesting. Tim, where do you have California ranked?
I do not.
Neither
do
I.
Catherine?
Nope.
No. The general election. This is one of those races that's probably going to be decided in the primary. Next one is Colorado, and Michael Bennett won that race a few years ago. I believe he won it in 2010, which was kind of a hard year to win it. But now he's running for re-election. So people are thinking this state, this Senate seat could be in trouble. Catherine, did you rank it?
I did not.
Tim?
I have it number one.
Number one? I didn't rank it either. Tim, tell us your rationale.
Well, I put this state first because if the Democrats are going to retake the Senate, then obviously the first thing they have to do is hold with their most vulnerable incumbent, Michael Bennett. Now, you mentioned he won barely in 2010. I'll say he won by less than 2 points. He only got 48% of the vote, and the Green Party candidate almost cost him the election. We will know on May the 2nd, which is week after next, who's running against him. Right now he has 6 possible opponents, but he might get lucky because none of those seem to be first-tier type challengers, even though the Republican Party is still really scrambling to try to get somebody to get at him. And we got to watch the presidential race there, too, because that's one of the few Democratic states that the Republicans have been running ahead of the Democrats in the polling in the presidential race. Cruz beats Hillary Clinton there. So does Trump. So we're going to have to watch that state, and that's why I got it number one.
Yeah, I think you're right about it being one of the Republicans' better take-backs. Opportunity.
That's one of only two.
Yes. Well, I mean, I guess, and they're a little, if we went to the Republican site, they might have a different look at this. Connecticut, Richard Blumenthal running for re-election. I think he won a race over Linda McMahon back in 2010, which that race was surprisingly close given how Connecticut is, but this is a presidential year. Catherine, did you have Connecticut ranked?
I did not.
And Tim?
No.
No, and I don't think it'll be that close of a race this time around. Florida. Catherine, did you rank Florida?
I did. It was on my list.
Okay, where'd you?
Just, I just think it's going to be interesting because, you know, we've lost Marco Rubio, so it's an open seat, so it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Yes, and Tim, did you rank Florida?
Yeah, yes, as a matter of fact, I ranked it second.
Yes, and I'll go ahead and tell y'all before we let Tim talk about it, I didn't rank it, although – I'll give you my rationale for why not after Tim gives you why. Tim?
Well, a year ago, the thought of this one being on anyone's radar, I guess, was unthinkable. But that was before Marco Rubio decided to make a statement, I guess you'd call it, and say he was quitting, signifying that he was all in the presidential race. And the Democrats have fielded two very strong candidates with Patrick Murphy and Alan Grayson, even though Grayson's run into some problems. The GOP also has several strong candidates, including the Lieutenant Governor, Lopez Cantera, a couple of U.S. representatives in Sanus and David Jolly. This thing is listed as a pure toss-up. And I figure it should be ranked number two because if the Democrats win there on election night, then it is a good night nationally.
That's right.
Yes. And I tell you what, I agree that on the numbers and the state and everything, it is top five material. I just I don't find the personalities in the race at this point very interesting, either side. You know, Patrick Murphy, you know, good congressman, what have you. I don't think Grayson's going to be the nominee. I think he's starting to have too much baggage. He's a little more interesting, but Murphy is just, you know, good public service, and that's not a bad thing. But it doesn't make for necessarily exciting political theater. So that's why it didn't make my top five. But if he gave me six or seven, I would have gotten around to Florida pretty quick. Next one is Georgia. You know, here it comes. Georgia, as it says on the description, demographics are changing. It's a great opportunity down the line, but it doesn't mention a candidate, and that's kind of a problem. Catherine, did you rank Georgia?
Well, of course I did. It's my home state. I'm going to be watching it closely. you know me. I always put Georgia in there. But I have to tell you, it might be one of those nights. Well, leading up, it might be one of those times when we just shake our heads a lot because this, I guess, for some reason, we seem to think he's the leading candidate. Jim Barksdale doesn't seem to be playing well with others.
Well, he's just not showing up. I mean, I don't know.
Right.
If you heard something, I don't know that he's causing friction or anything. He's just
Not showing up at anything.
Yeah,
he's not answering. Yeah, he's not answering media calls. He's not responding to media requests. He's, you know,
yeah.
And his website has almost nothing on it. It's all he talks about on his website is economics, which, you know, is important, but there's a lot more to. There's a lot of other issues besides economics, especially when he doesn't really spell out how he wants to solve some of our economic challenges. He just says that they're there. Well, yeah, we all know that.
Yes.
So.
Yeah, because, I mean, you can put up even statements about other issues that are very generic if you feel like you can't get painted in the box early on, but it's just the lack of even campaigning anywhere. Tim, did you put Georgia listed?
Yeah, let me say one thing for the benefit of y'all and our listeners. If you hear a dog barking and a collection of antique bells ringing, my grandchildren are here. So just thought I would throw that one out there. And no, I did not. I think you know how I feel about that, David. I think that Senator Isaacson is the most popular politician in this state. And apparently, I hate to say it, but he apparently is running against a lamppost. And, you know, you can't beat somebody with nobody. And so far, as y'all said, our candidate hasn't even shown up, and time's running short, and it was going to be almost impossible as it goes. And I got a feeling that they, if something don't change, they're going to call that one as soon as the polls close away.
Yeah.
So.
I have okay. to say, though, this week I saw a response from Senator Isaacson about the Supreme Court nomination. I was very disappointed in the language that he used about, you know, we need to hold off because, the voters need to have their say. I'm like, yeah, we had our say in 2012. We reelected the president.
Yeah.
But anyway, I was very disappointed in his – it was very
he's following the playbook.
He's following the playbook.
From the hymnal.
Yeah,
I
but, you know, sometimes he doesn't. And I was just disappointed that it was so strident. It seemed unnecessary.
Yeah. Well, hey, you know, he's old Rock the Boat Johnny, but he's not rocking the boat on that one.
Right.
Yeah, Hawaii. Anybody rank Hawaii?
No.
Nope.
Should be reliably Democratic. I don't even know if there's a, you know, he won. I think it says he won the special election. Brian Schatz, that is, by 40 points. So that's pretty decided. Okay, the next one is Illinois.
The next one is Idaho.
Idaho. What in the world, Catherine? Why are these? I'm gonna have to get a list of states. I wanted to trust this website because I wanted to just expedite, and, you know, not just say out loud states that don't have races. Help me out, Catherine. Idaho. Well, you rank Idaho?
I did not.
Tim?
I'm just looking at a list.
Yeah, so I'm looking at the CSDC site.
Yeah, if I was ranking them all, I would say Idaho most likely to vote Republican, but that's just me.
Yeah, me too. But it is, in the list.
Yeah, let me go ahead. I'm going to go ahead and pull up Politics One, and they have a little map, and no matter how lopsided the state is, they'll have that, and I'll put those side by side. Next one is Illinois, and I'll go ahead and tell you, I ranked Illinois 5th. This is a very good take-back opportunity for the Democratic Party. But in addition, it has, you know, interesting candidates. You've got one of the most moderate Republicans trying to save his seat, running in a state that's very Democratic. How far to the middle is he going to move and shun Republican opinions? This is a guy, unlike Johnny Isaacson, who actually, you know, kind of diverted from the playbook on the Supreme Court nomination. But then you have Tammy Duckworth, an incredibly heroic war veteran that serves in our Congress. And I just think this race is going to be very intriguing and hopefully very inspirational in the end. Tim, did you rank Illinois?
Yep, I got it 3rd. Kirk came in with the GOP wave in 2010 to everyone's surprise. And this year he is facing down with Tammy Duckworth. You know, everybody knows her story, decorated veteran, wounded in battle. And she will present a huge challenge with it being a presidential year. I got a feeling we're going to get some great news out of Illinois election night. And again, it's one of those states that you say, if you're going to take back the Senate, well, absolutely got to count this one as a pickup, or you're not going to take back the Senate. And guess what? We just completed all 5 of the state. Nope. I've still got one more state. Never mind. So I've got 4 more.
Yeah,
I've got a few more.
I've got 3 more.
I've got 3 more.
Catherine, I think. Yeah, Catherine's got some more, too. Okay, the next state is Indiana, moving next door to Illinois. And,
Tim, do you have Indiana ranked?
No, I won't. That's one of them states you want to rank, but you can't because you don't have but five choices. So I did.
Yep, I know what you're saying. Catherine, did you have it ranked?
Nope.
Yep, I don't have it ranked either, but this is a state where Dan Coats is retiring and longtime Republican senator. And former Representative Barron Hill is running for the seat. He's pretty popular from southern Indiana. That's more of the swingable area, whereas the northern Indiana is more Democratic. Indianapolis, the city, is in the suburbs, are more Republican. And so if Barron Hill can put those two ends of the state together and do not terribly around the Indianapolis area, you know, that could be a surprise there, and that's going to be gravy, if you will, because I don't think, like Tim was saying, I don't think you lose in Illinois and win in Indiana. That's pretty unlikely. Any more thoughts on Indiana? State is Iowa. Do either one of y'all have Iowa ranked?
Nope, not me.
No,
I didn't either, but I will say this. Charles Grassley, I didn't think that this was going to be a very tough race for him, but he has gotten so embroiled into this Supreme Court nomination since he's the head of the Judiciary Committee that he's really taken on a lot of negative heat. And this is going to be one that'll be interesting to watch watch the Senate polling on this, because he does have a former lieutenant governor, Patty Judge, who's running, and this could become one of those seats that, you know, you look up and it's Labor Day and you go, wow, this is actually in play too, and expanding the map. Could y'all see that happening?
I could, actually, yes.
If you go to 10 or 12 seats in play, yeah.
Yeah. Next one is Kentucky. This is one where Rand Paul had to change all kind of laws just so he could run for president and run for Senate. And in the end, it didn't matter. He dropped out in time just to run for his Senate seat. Although I think he took some, you know, negative impact in Kentucky. But Kentucky is a fairly red state. Tim, is Rand Paul, do you have it ranked, and is Rand Paul in any trouble?
No, and no, I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
Yeah, it's a state that if this got put on the map, you'd really know that the Republicans are in deep trouble, because he still seems more popular than Mitch McConnell, who, you know, given if it had been in a presidential year, he might have been in more trouble than he was, but the odd year was just no way they were going to get him. Next one's Louisiana. Louisiana, this is David Vitter's not running for re-election. It's an open seat, but this just doesn't feel like the governor's race, does it, y'all?
No, it doesn't. But, you know, I don't have it ranked, but it's, you know, what's bubbling under the top five. Like, it'll be interesting to see how things go there, considering the governor's race. But I agree. It doesn't seem to be as interesting. Or.
Yeah. Tim, do you have it ranked?
No, but it will be interesting, like Catherine said, not win or lose, but just to see the numbers, to see if the Vitter race was just an outlier, you know.
Yeah, I think Foster Campbell, a longtime PSC public service commissioner, is running there, so they do have a credible candidate. And one thing I will say this, it's not on my rankings either, but if we had to rank most interesting U.S. Senate races in early December, it might make it, because there's a good chance it will hit a runoff, and so that will give it some intrigue right there. Even if it were to even be two Republicans, it would have some intrigue, although I think it's pretty likely, given the number of Republicans running, that the Democrat, most likely Foster Campbell, will make it to that runoff ballot. It's just seeing if he can, you know, push it to the next level. Next one is going to be Maryland. Catherine, did you rank Maryland?
I did. It's my number one.
Okay.
I'm really.
Tell us your rationale, and I think I know what your rationale is going to be.
Well, I think it's going to be very exciting. I think both of the Democratic. I mean, I think it's going to be decided in the primary, essentially, and I think both of the Democratic candidates will be excellent senators. But I'm really rooting for African-American woman to be in the Senate, not just because she's an African-American woman, but because she's also a really incredibly talented and skilled and compelling lawmaker. So I'm excited. I mean, I think either would be excellent, but I'm really rooting for Donna Edwards.
Yeah, Tim, did you have Maryland ranked?
I did not. That race was so close that absolutely it might turn on a political ad, and y'all know the story behind that and what's happened with it. But it is certainly going to be one to watch on primary night. But, again, I didn't have five slots.
I didn't rank it either because of the general situation, but I will say this. I agree that if we're ranking the most interesting party primaries, it probably would be number one, given that. I mean, there's just been so much news.
Yeah, I think so.
Have two candidates. What's the real shame is you could take either candidate, Edwards or Van Hollen, and you could loan them to another state, you know, like Georgia, and you could turn two races into competitive races because they're both pretty good candidates. I thought about something. You know, honestly, if you look at what Hillary Clinton is going to need in a VP candidate, it's going to be a young, fresh face, you know, in a state that's not, you know, duplication of where she lives. And it's like maybe the loser of that race could almost be her vice presidential nominee because, you know, either one would add something, you know, to her ticket. And I just thought that was kind of a strange coincidence. But, you know, one's giving it all. You know, one's going to come on with a big prize and one's going to be looking at the what to do with the future of their political career after that race. So, and we may talk more about that primary later on. Well, let's keep going on. And, of course, my computer jumped all the way up back to the A's, so let's fix that and get back down to Missouri. Now, I'll go ahead and tell y'all, I almost ranked Missouri. I was right there with it, but did not. Catherine, did you rank Missouri?
I did not.
Okay. Tim, did you rank Missouri?
No, again, I wanted to, but
yeah,
couldn't do it.
I think Roy Blunt's not a real popular politician, I don't think. And, you know, it's right there. And they have a really good candidate running against Roy Blunt and Secretary of State, Jason Candler. He's a former veteran. I mean, gets really high marks on his job as Secretary of State. And if he really kind of catches fire and Missouri becomes a battleground, this could be another one of those, you know, expand the map states, if you will. And so that's why I just was right there with it. Next state is going to be Nevada. Is this the only democratically held seat that has been put into the toss-up range, if you will, Tim?
I think it is. Are you asking me if I ranked it or?
Yeah, and you can tell. And I didn't rank it. Tim, did you rank it?
Absolutely. I had it as number five. You know, with Harry Reid retiring, that made this seat competitive immediately. There are four Democrats running, including Reid's own hand-picked successor, Catherine Cortez Masto. There are nine Republicans running, the favorite of the bunch. And the anointed one on that side is Representative Joe Heck. To make it interesting, though, you guys remember Sharon Angle, the mm-hmm. nutcase that blew the race essentially against Reid 6 years ago? Well, she's decided she wanted to come back for more. I'm sure the Republicans cringe. So there are your two states that the Democrats absolutely must hold, the two competitive states where a Democrat held the seat. And you know, they got to win those two on election night or they can forget any talk of retaking the Senate. So, and you know, the presidential race will be fairly close in that state, too. So,
yeah. Catherine, did you rank Nevada?
I did not.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be really interesting. It's just that I only had five. So,
No, definitely. That's, and I did it on purpose, so it has some different states. Yeah, and I do. I will say this. I think we could drop a Nevada and somehow still pick up the Senate. It would just be a whole lot easier if we held that one. But there, I think there are ways around that one, although it probably will go with the presidential race, and I don't see that one, you know, us losing that presidential electoral votes there.
But it's not going to be a blowout, David.
No, it won't.
There ain't going to be major league coattails from the presidential race in that state. So.
No, and that's one of those states where Donald Trump may do just as well as or maybe even slightly better than a Mitt Romney or something, because he's kind of a because of the gambling and hotel ties. He's somewhat of a hometown guy, as much as you can be. Well, then the next race to talk about is going to be New Hampshire. I didn't rank New Hampshire. Catherine, did you rank it?
I did not, but I'll be watching it just because I think it's kind of interesting with two women running, and Maggie Hassan has been a good governor. And
yeah. Tim, did you rank it?
Well, no, if you've been counting, I've done got all five of my states, but if we'd have had a number six, that's where I'd have put New Hampshire.
Well, Tim, what I'll do is I'll come to you for comments then from this point forward, not be redundant.
Here's a comment for you. I saw a listing today. I forgot whose it was, but they actually had Senator Ayotte as the most vulnerable Republican incumbent. I don't really agree with that, but that they thought enough of her to put her that high speaks volumes about this race. And if you saw the polls, you know, 2, 3, 4 points tied, you know, all for months. So
No, she's definitely in trouble, and it's just, I think as more Senate polling begins to come out, and that'll start happening once the presidential primaries are decided, I think, then we'll put more focus on that, because they'll poll states and they'll poll races like that underneath them. But
Ayotte is also one of the people that they're sort of talking about as a potential vice presidential person on the
Republican
side.
They would be giving up that Senate seat, and if they gave up that Senate seat, you know, they got to look. Can they retain that Senate seat, and even if they lose the presidency? I mean, they've got to decide where they want to do it.
She could run,
you know,
She can
run for both.
Every
state has different laws. That's why I'm trying to figure out the laws there. Yeah. It would just make it harder, though, unless the shine of being on the national ticket, that where she didn't have to, you know, go all across the state, because a VP that can only you know, go to Bedford and you know, Manchester and places like that, it's not real valuable when they need to be going to Ohio and Florida and everywhere else. So that would hamstring her if she tried to run for both. Now, if she was in a completely safe seat, you know, like maybe Lloyd Benson, wasn't he up in 88 and he wasn't going to lose? So he didn't have to go all around Texas. He could go other places for
Yeah, but, you know, voters don't really like that, I don't think. I mean, some voters don't. They don't like it when they don't, you know, like either, you know, pick one or, you know, I don't want to use an unfortunate what's the word? Never mind.
Yeah, well, let's move on to the next one. New York, Charles Schumer, not on my list. Catherine?
No.
Tim?
Not on your list.
Any comment on New York?
Not on any list I'm looking at either. So.
Yeah, that's one of the most safe seats there'll be of either party. It's right up there with Idaho for the Republicans. North Carolina. I did rank North Carolina. North Carolina was fourth on mine. I just don't think that, you know, Richard Burr is very popular. Probably not that well known. One of the biggest stories he's made was the fact that he couldn't vote. He didn't have his ID when he went to vote. Not that that'll necessarily hurt him. That'll maybe hurt those laws more than anything. But North Carolina is really at a crossroads as a state. Are they going to try to be more progressive, like the Research Triangle, and keep up with Georgia and Virginia and being progressive? Are they going to move back more towards the Old South like their neighbors to the east and say Kentucky? And these political races are going to be a little bit of defining that. Catherine, did you rank North Carolina?
I did not.
Okay. Tim, comments on North Carolina?
Well, it will be interesting to see. You know, we got a very contentious governor's race up there, too. It's going to be interesting to compare the numbers and see if they do in North Carolina what, say, they've been doing in Georgia. If you look at our Senate races and governor's races that occur in the same year, you'll see almost identical numbers. I would like to see if that also happens in North Carolina, because if it does, it might mean bad news for the Republicans. Their Senate they should win the Senate race. They should do better in the Senate race than in the governor's race, if my theory is not correct.
Yeah, but I mean, they have had some takebacks. While the rest of the South was becoming so Republican, they elected John Edwards and they elected Kay Hagan and different people like that. And there is a governor's race, too. So, you know, there's going to be a pretty coordinated effort that you can run against
and
a lot of races.
And what else? Ground zero as far as battleground states in the presidential race, right?
Oh, yeah. You can imagine how many. I mean, Catherine, you may have been hearing. Are there some people talking about going and, you know, work in that area against, in particular, Governor McCrory? But that's not going to help Trump or Cruz, and it's not going to help Burr if they do. Have you been hearing, you know, people coming from out of state or planning to go from out of state?
Yeah, I've heard a little, not that much, but there's always people who are, you know, abandon their home state to go work somewhere else.
Well, I mean, I'll say this: if that were my issue, and you know, I mean, I'm just that's not my demographic population. But if that were something, man, that was critical. I really passionately, that's one of the top issues for me. Then, and if your state was either safe, you know, it's not going to be a presidential battleground. It doesn't have much going on. Then that's a state you might pick to go to. Or even if you thought, well, we aren't going to our state, or we can go in our state without me, that you might go to work there because of just the fact that you're so incensed by it. And so that's why I think it could get some people working out of state more so than other states. And it doesn't hurt that it's, you know, one of those few states that went one way in 2008 and one way in 2012.
Right.
Next one, Ohio. I amazingly did not rank it, but I think it's going to be a good race. Catherine, did you rank Ohio?
I did not rank Ohio.
Okay.
My last one is at the very end of the alphabet. So.
I have a feeling, that both of us, I'm just looking, probably going to be there too, unless you know more about Wyoming politics than I do. Tim, a comment on Ohio. Anything?
Yeah, I think it's very obvious that Senator Portman has got quite a race in store for him. A lot of people are wondering if Strickland's up to the challenge, but you know what? I believe that he is. I believe this will be a good tight race, and I believe it's going to be a good tight race on election night too. But again, when you got five choices, there we are.
Yeah, I think Rob Portman's probably is a person is a little more popular than some of these other Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just a state that's, you know, totally a swing state. And if people vote straight ticket, I mean, you just don't think there's going to be a lot of Hillary Clinton, Portman voters, you know, for whatever it'll be. Okay, Oregon, Ron Wyden, he's been in the Senate quite a long time. I did not rank him, rank that state. Catherine, did you?
I did not.
Tim, any comment on Oregon?
No, very safe Democratic hold there, no problems.
Yep. Next one's Pennsylvania. I ranked it as third. I think it's going to be really, really interesting. Pat Toomey is somebody that was considered very, very conservative and has moved to the middle in probably style and tone more so than actual voting. But a lot of Democrats are lining up in that state, and I don't really think that state's so much purple as it is kind kind of a purpley blue. I mean, it's more blue. And so I think this could be a very good take-back opportunity. Catherine, I know you didn't rank it based on what you told me about the alphabet. Any comment on it?
I agree with you. I think it's going to be really important to, and well, I think, again, it's going to be one that we're all going to be watching on in November, but I just didn't rank it.
Yeah. Tim, any thoughts on that one?
Yeah, I think the main thing to watch is who gets the Democratic nomination up there. You know that there's been a tussle back and forth, and a lot of the national folks don't like Admiral Sestak. For some reason, I'm not sure why that is, but if it was because of the Arlen Specter situation or whatever. So a lot of it may depend on who actually gets the nomination and how well the party coalesces around them. Pennsylvania will be a state that the Democrats at the presidential level should win by, 5 points or so. Be a good tight race. Toomey's he's a good campaigner. It's going to be tough.
Yep. Next one's Vermont. Patrick Leahy's running for re-election. I'm just glad. I was worried. I saw Superman versus Batman. He was in the Senate chamber when Lex Luthor blew it up, and I never heard a report on him later in the movie, but apparently he's okay. Y'all didn't know Patrick Leahy was in Superman versus Batman, did you?
I did not.
Yeah, he was. I know that guy, and I looked it up and figured out that so it was. I recognized his face, just couldn't put a name with it. But either one of y'all ranked Vermont?
No.
I mean, no. Tim, I know you didn't. I'm sorry. And then Catherine, I doubt you did. You're based on alphabet. Although B's close to the end. Let's keep moving down. Washington State, Patty Murray, she's been in the Senate since, I believe, 1992. I didn't rank it. Catherine, you rank it?
I did not.
Tim, any thought on Patty Murray?
No, there's nothing. Nothing to see there. Nothing to see there.
Yep, last one. Yep, last one. Wisconsin. Ron Johnson won this seat in 2010. But this is a state that's elected, Scott Walker twice. So it's not the Democratic state that it once was. But Russ Feingold is running for a return. I can't say re-election, but a return to the Senate. And I did rank this as my second state. And Catherine, if math and alphabet serve me correctly, did you rank this one too?
I did.
Yep.
I love Russ Feingold. I'm just going to say it right out there. He's the only non-Georgia candidate that I've ever made a not the only, but I made a very large contribution to him at one time and met him in Georgia after his, outspoken lack of support for the Patriot Act. And he's a hero of mine, and I hope he gets back in there because we need him.
Yeah, I think Russ Feingold is what Bernie Sanders should be. I mean, he's very, very liberal. But he has a happy nature about himself. I mean, he doesn't have the anger and the grumpiness about him. I mean, he's kind of a happy warrior. And I think that's kind of sets him apart. Tim, any thoughts on Wisconsin?
Yeah, well, I'm going to tell you why I did not rank it. Because in every public poll taken for the last 3 years, Feingold has had the lead, often a healthy double-digit lead. I believe this race, I'm counting that as a pickup. I believe this is a done deal. I don't believe there'll be any high drama on election night. I believe we can just about pack it in if it continues at its present trajectory, and I don't see why it shouldn't. So that's why I didn't rank.
Yeah, final question then on this marathon topic. Tim, I'll ask both of y'all this. Tim, who do you think's in more trouble, Ron Johnson or Mark Kirk?
I think that Johnson definitely is.
Yeah, me too.
Same question, Catherine. Okay, I'm going to go the other way. Wrong answer. The answer's Kirk. you know, like my namesake, if you will. But I think actually just Illinois is a little bluer is why I say that than Wisconsin. A lot of that has to do with the Scott Walker nonsense. Well, Tim, let's kind of pivot around and come back down south, or at least one half of this is going to be back down south, and get your outrage of the week.
Okay, well, guys, this is one I saved from last week, but it's not really dated. This is a tale of two governors, one up in Lansing, Michigan, a place that Catherine knows very well, and the other one over in Montgomery, Alabama. Now, they are separated by a distance of some 817 miles, and yet they have much in common. Both of them were elected in the GOP wave of 2010. Both of them are halfway through their second term, and obviously both of them are in major, major trouble. Robert Bentley is the 73-year-old governor of the state of Alabama, hailing from a small town in a rural county. That looks like so much of that state if you've traveled around it. And like much of his state's rural population, he is very conservative. He has always run for office front and center as a family values Christian. 5 years ago, on his inauguration day, he stood in the pulpit of the Dexter Avenue King Memorial Church and said the following: "Anybody here today who has not accepted Jesus Christ as their Savior, I'm telling you, you're not my brother and you're not my sister, and I want to be her brother." And although there was, you know, some slight backlash to those remarks, most of the governor's conservative base in Alabama welcomed what he said as a sign that the state had, as its chief executive, a man of high moral character. Well, that was then, because when the Ides of March rolled around this year, somebody's brother, how should I put this, became somebody's daddy. And it all began to unravel. It started when the governor suddenly fired Spencer Collier, his secretary of law enforcement. Now, Mr. Collier, who had been a longtime close friend of the governor, felt betrayed. And as often happens in these situations, he had at his disposal some damaging knowledge. In the state investigation of the House Speaker over there, who is also in just desperate trouble about his misuse of taxpayer money, something else came to light. The governor had apparently been having an affair with his 45-year-old married aide, lady by the name of Rebecca Mason. And when the governor found out what Collier knew and couldn't get him to shut down the investigation, he then fired Collier along with his number two man in that department. So Collier responded by making public many of the details of the affair, including, if you heard it, a rather risque audio recording of the governor discussing Mrs. Mason's attributes and what his hands had been doing with them. And a quick sidebar here. Why are some Republican politicians so enamored with their hands? But back to the story. That was damning enough. But there was more. There always seems to be more. You know, the governor's wife of 50 years had divorced him, so he couldn't get too much into denial about this. Plus, to make it even worse, it appears that the governor may have used both taxpayer and campaign funds to try and cover up his affair. The State Ethics Commission and federal investigators are now actively investigating this mess that gets even messier. Everything from using a state helicopter to retrieve a wallet left at a Gulf Coast hotel to allegations involving a trip by the governor and his girlfriend to see a Celine Dion concert out in Las Vegas. The governor, get this, even made Celine Dion an honorary citizen of Alabama on the night he went to see her. I'm not kidding about this. Now, there's no recall law in Alabama, so last week, articles of impeachment were filed in the legislature. And what does Bentley have to say? Well, in a recent news conference, he said he had no physical
relationship with Mrs. Mason. And when he was asked if he had a romantic relationship with her, he drifted off into some dream world where he said he loved all of his staff members. Well, isn't that nice? And then there's the saga of Rick Snyder, the governor of Michigan. We've all heard about this. Anyone who even casually watches the news knows about the water crisis up in Flint. It started back in April of 2014. The governor had appointed one of these emergency managers to run the day-to-day operation of the city, citing bad finances. He did the same thing over in Detroit. One of the things this manager did was change the source of city water from Lake Huron, which is Detroit's water system, to the Flint River. He did this, he said, to save money. Okay. Unfortunately, state regulators never required the new source of water to be properly treated. It had more salt in it. What did that do? It corroded the lead water pipes and led to high levels of lead in the blood of the local citizenry, especially children. This went on for 16 months, and wouldn't you just know that when the media started breaking stories about this, that the governor was as surprised as the rest of us to learn about it, or so he said. So Governor Snyder appointed a task force to affix blame for this outrage. At the same time, he mentioned two things. First, he said he acted as soon as he learned of this crisis. Second, he said the blame was someone else's, and he would find out who. But the funny thing happened. The task force he appointed concluded that the blame for this was mostly his and the state's. Oops. And as it turned out, he did not act immediately because his chief of staff spilled the beans that they knew about it 3 months before he even claimed to know about it. Just this week, at about the same time that Governor Bentley was professing his love for his entire staff at his press conference, well, Governor Snyder traveled over to Washington and was given testimony at a hearing of the U.S. House Oversight and Government Reform Committee. And I'm shocked to report that the governor split the blame for the water crisis between the EPA and, quote, career bureaucrats, whatever that means. So our tale of two governors stands right here with it all being someone else's fault. It's all a big misunderstanding. Dry wells don't have any water, blah, blah, blah. We have a love gov who loves everybody. And up there in Michigan, we have Sergeant Schultz who knows nothing and sees nothing. You know what? The court system needs to get a turn with these two. The court of public opinion has already weighed in. And let me add one last thing. Impeachment vote on Bentley could come as early as next week, guys. Stay tuned.
Well, it'll be a topic. It is. Catherine, I've never been to Michigan, but it's something dawned on me, and it just makes this all the more baffling. Michigan, just looking at a map, appears to be the state with more freshwater coastline than any other state in the nation. Isn't that correct?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, there's just no excuse for a state with, what, three, is it two or three Great Lakes that touch their borders?
Four.
Four, yeah, see, I mean, there's just no excuse, I mean, for that state to have water problems. But then, of course, it's a pipe issue more than anything. It's just, you got to spend money to have clean water.
Well.
And it's a basic right and a basic service that the government should be taking care of. Tim,
Catherine. You know, there are people that disagree with that.
Catherine,
the water is not
a
right.
About Michigan.
Not a right.
You. Why did the governor up there decide to do this deal of appointing these emergency managers in these cities up there to supersede the will of the people who had voted, you know, for their own mayors and town councils and all of that, because
school
these
board.
Are the ones that are making the mistakes, right?
Yeah, I haven't followed all the minutiae of, but there were some there have been problems with some of these city managers, mayors, school boards, but this was not, that's not really the answer to, it's just like in Georgia where the governor wants to come in and take over some of the schools. That's not really the solution to the problem. It's a little bit of a Band-Aid on a problem that that requires, more oversight, more. It's a complicated issue, and like David just said, it takes money to, it costs something to provide fresh, clean water. It also costs something to have good, well-managed cities and school boards, and so you need to have some kind of oversight, and I don't think that the governor is the best option for that.
Was it a power grab then?
Oh,
or,
yeah.
Or what?
Definitely a power. I'm not going to say definitely. I believe that it was a political power grab, that it was Republicans thinking they know how to do things better than Democrats.
Yeah.
State like Michigan, there may not be chances to be in power if you're Republican much longer, because that's a very Democratic state by and large. I think we've got
it always was, but it hasn't been the last 15, 20 years.
It's these off years, these off year elections that are once again a problem up even in the North.
Well, no, they had Republican governors Mitt Romney's father was the governor of Michigan.
Oh, that's way back when. Well, let me get
so it was primarily Democratic, and then the Republicans have really taken over the last couple decades, not just on off years, but, there's a big, very wealthy right-wing cabal that has funded a lot of that Republican takeover of Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Well, let me see if we can get to one more quick topic. We're going to change up, and we're going to go to the strangest commercial of the year. If you haven't seen it, Daily Kos had it posted. It is for Senor Mike Pate, who is running for Congress in Kentucky in an open seat. I need to look up the district number. But Senor Pate, they really went all blockbuster on this thing. Hired some of the finest Latino act probably ever seen, the highest quality fencing we've ever seen, the set, everything. Now, being serious, Tim, give me your thoughts on the ad.
Well, I was thinking and watching it that every expense that could be thrown by the wayside was not dealt with here. That, I tell you what, I've never seen that's one of the worst political commercials I've ever seen in my life. It was almost like a satire thing. It was like The Onion, if people know about that site on the internet. It was like they were doing the thing, or like Bill Maher come up with a funny one to do, or Saturday Night Live. I couldn't believe I was seeing something that was for real. Could y'all?
I agree.
No,
Catherine,
I'll get your thoughts on it. Catherine, go ahead.
But it was like, let's just offend everybody, right? let's see if we can make an ad that will offend everyone.
They succeeded.
Yeah, it offends common sense in that, okay, if I thought the wall that they talk about that Donald Trump wants to build would be in places where there's no type of barrier. If the places where there's a barrier, people can just get through, why can't they just burrow through a wall or dig under a wall or whatever it may be? You're showing that this fence is penetrable. Now, like I think I was telling y'all pre-show, what I want is a pair of those wire cutters. Man, that fence just snapped right apart when they got those heavy-duty wire cutters. But, it's just –
so crazy. I mean, I don't know if this will work or not. I guess we'll have to follow this race and see how Senor Pape does. Of course, he will be referred from now on this show as Senor Pape.
That's the first district, by the way, David, which is the most conservative district in the state. And on his website, he is actually featuring that ad and bragging about how it's gaining national attention. That nobody's going to stop me from standing up for you.
It is getting national attention, Senor Pape, but not all attention is good attention.
That's right.
That's what you got to remember. Well, that's been the Kudzu Vine for tonight. We left a few topics on the table. I'm sure one or two of which will roll the next week. But until then, it's been the show.
Good night, everybody.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
With a strong and united.